This episode of Where Did the Road Go is brought to you in part by our Patreons. In particular, this month is being sponsored by Lindsay Marie Tribbett, UFO Weekly News, and Nick Martin.
I thank you all so very much.
And if you want to become a patron, you can do so at www.wheredidtheroadgo.com. And now our show.
Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
Welcome to this edition of Where Did the Road Go? And tonight I am speaking with Angel Hammer. And as we just discussed, that's your real name.
Yeah, that's my real name.
And yet, to me, it sounds like a boss you have to fight in a video game.
Oh, I'm too nice to fight.
And yet, you pointed out, it kind of sounds like a death metal band.
That is what I've been told, that it sounds like the name of a death metal band.
Yeah, I'm surprised it hasn't been used yet.
Well, maybe after this, somebody will snag it.
There's your name, Angel Hammer.
I feel very special.
And where are you located?
Right now, I'm living in Kingsport, Tennessee.
Okay.
It's about 40 minutes from Greenville, Tennessee, where the Battle of Blue Springs was fought during the Civil War.
Hmm. Okay.
So it's a very historic area.
So there is a rock band called Angel Hammer.
Oh, is there?
Yep.
Well, that's good to know. I'll have to check them out.
They're from New Zealand.
Oh, that does not surprise me.
and they're death metal and thrash. So there you go.
That definitely doesn't surprise me. I'll have to look into that.
So you've had a lifetime of weird experiences.
I really have. Yeah. Yeah. Paranormal, strange, creepy, weird, spine tingling.
And you're working on a book on all this?
I am. The book is called Companion of the Dead. It's going to be available for pre-order on July 31st on Amazon, KDP.
Oh, okay. Oh, so soon.
Yeah, well, pre-order July 31st. I hope to actually have it, you know, completely ready by Halloween, so.
Nice. Okay. And how long are you expecting this book to be?
Not super long, but I want to make sure, you know, that I get all the proofreading and editing and all of that done. I've got to take my time because as I mentioned, I'm a mother of two beautiful children and I don't really have a lot of extra time. So I'm just kind of doing it when I have a minute here and there.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That makes sense.
Got to squeeze it in.
And you said your whole family has had weird experiences.
Yeah, my mom, my uncle, my aunt, and I even have one story from my great-grandma that's going to be in the book, too.
Hmm, okay. Well, let's talk about some of your experiences. You said to me you had experiences as young as two that you remember.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to hear about that one, I'd be glad to tell
sure,
you.
Sure.
The very first thing that's ever happened to me, my grandma, shout out to Grandma Sharon, my Granny Sharon, as I call her, was present for this one. And I've always remembered it because we've always talked about it. We'll just be hanging out and she'll bring it up. And, you know, I guess I was, you know, she's like a second mom to me. I used to stay with her every single weekend when I lived in Ohio before we moved here. We moved to Tennessee when I was 8. And one of these times I was about 2. And we were up late, really late. I'll never forget that she was watching Star Trek. I don't remember which Star Trek it was, but it was the middle of the night. We were in the living room, and she had Star Trek playing. And I was just kind of playing, you know, in the darkness as she was sitting on the couch watching it, you know, mm-hmm. as little kids do, exploring. And I was under the table and playing with her sneakers. She had some Jordans, and I was pumping them up. And out of nowhere, we heard my little toy phone ringing. I had this little toy phone. One of the ones you put your finger in, it was like a rotary phone.
Yeah.
And we heard it ringing from across the room. And it was really strange because it was just me and her awake. My grandpa was asleep in the next room. And we you know, she didn't realize, I guess, that I was under the table because the room was dark. So she didn't realize that it wasn't me. And she fussed at me. She was like, you know, Angel, it's late. You know, you can play with your phone tomorrow. Please don't play with the phone. Your grandpa's trying to sleep. And she didn't want to wake him up. And I was like, you know, it's not me. And she just kind of let it go. Well, a few minutes later, we hear it ringing again, and she started to kind of fuss at me again, and by the time she could even get the words out, I was already beside her, because I was pretty freaked out, you know, myself, as to why it was ringing when it was sitting across the room on the other side of the floor. And so once she realized that it wasn't me, she went over to the phone, and which was still ringing, and she picked it up off the floor. And when she went to turn it off, the off switch wouldn't work. It just kept ringing. So this thing is ringing and ringing. Even with the off switch turned off, it's ringing. So she goes in the other room, she gets a screwdriver, and she goes to take the batteries out of it. And when she opened up the little battery flap, there weren't even batteries in the phone. Like, there weren't even batteries in the toy. Hmm. And after that night, that toy never worked again. It never worked again. So we have no explanation as to how it could have possibly been ringing, you know, with no batteries in it. And of course, you know, I'm very small at this time, so I only remember so much about it. But I can't even tell you when the last time I had played with it before that night was, because it was across the room in the toy box, you know, just hanging out. I had a separate set of toys for when I was staying with her. So it's not like I had been recently playing with it, but that is probably the earliest freaky thing that I can possibly remember. And my grandma still brings it up every chance she can get. It's just one of those fun memories.
Yeah, that's definitely an odd one. And it's not unheard of.
No, it's not. Especially, you know, if batteries are dying in a toy. But for the toy to work with no batteries in it at all, that was the strange
thing. Yes, absolutely. Strange thing.
Because where is it getting that charge from?
Right?
Yeah. People. So, yeah, that's the weirdest thing. Yeah, maybe it's feeding off of the environment, or I don't know. I don't even try to explain the things that happen to me. I just kind of roll with it. So.
Yeah, and that's kind of the best way to go a lot of times, I think.
Yeah, I try to not overthink it.
If you overthink it, if you put too many limits on it, you may not see what the bigger picture is, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I try to just go with the flow in life. It's the best way.
So what other things stand out to you when you were young?
Yeah, well, I don't want to, you know, put it all out there, but I will tell you that the scariest thing that has ever happened to me is probably the story that I initially, you know, emailed to you. And that is when I was a little under 12 years old. I moved with my mom and my stepdad at the time and my baby brother to this little rental house. It was shortly after we had moved to Tennessee, and we were just kind of bouncing around trying to find a good, you know, a good place that we really liked. And we had moved into this house, and it was, you know, we were just getting settled and all that. We'd only been there a few months, and we were settling in and just started a new school and made a friend and had this one best friend. And, you know, we always like to have sleepovers. And this was back in the day. This was before, you know, we didn't have a home computer with internet on it. We still had a landline phone that we all had to share in the kitchen. Right. You know, nothing was private. So I, just to give a little background, I was obsessed, you know, all the kids at the time, we were obsessed with, like, magic of any kind, Harry Potter, or, you know, the movie The Craft was really big. We used to watch that one over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And we were just obsessed with magic. It was the thing. So one weekend, I had stayed with my uncle, who had this massive pile of books, just random books that he was getting rid of that he didn't read anymore. And as I'm digging through this pile of books, I find a book on magic, which I don't remember the title of the book. As I said, this was a long time ago. I wasn't even 12 yet. But I found a book on magic and another one on, like, meditation and things like that, and like two books. And he's told me, you know, I could take them home and I could keep them, but don't tell my mom because she might get mad at him, type of thing.
Right.
So, you know, my mom's the oldest, so out of the three kids. So I took the books home and I was pretty into them, you know, from a young age, I've always loved to read and I've always been kind of inquisitive. So I was really getting into it and practicing some of the meditations and things in the book, and Halloween was coming around. So I had my best friend at the time come and stay the night. And we were going to have a sleepover and go trick-or-treating and all that fun stuff. We ended up deciding to just stay home because my mom and my uncle and my stepdad had some friends over. They were having a big kind of, well, not super big, but having a little kind of Halloween party get-together in our basement, which we had a very large basement. And my uncle is a tattoo artist. He had painted this really creepy, cool mural on the wall, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was very Halloween-esque. And they had, like, black lights and things like that, and food and punch and what have you. So they were having their party downstairs, and me and Becca, we decided that we were going to stay upstairs and just watch some scary movies and kind of listen for my baby brother. Because my baby brother, if I remember correctly, it was just before his first birthday, I believe. So my mom was like, if you guys are going to stay here, you know, please just listen for your brother if you don't care. So I was like, all right. And we were listening for my brother and just hanging out and, you know, what have you. And I decided to, you know, talk Becca into looking at this book that I had gotten from my uncle. And I was like, okay, you know, this book wasn't just meditations. This also had rituals in it. Now, I have practiced several religions. I am very open, and I don't align myself fully with any one religion. I feel that the truth of the universe is something so so beautiful and so amazing. I don't think that one religion could get it all completely correct.
Right.
So I have tried several different religions. You know, I was raised Christian, but I've also, you know, experimented with Wicca and Taoism, Buddhism, and things like that. So at this time, I was, you know, looking into this Wicca book, and I was like, okay. I was young at the time. Now, I did not understand that this was not a Wicca book. This was not an earth magic, paganistic type of book. This was a darker type of magic book. This was like a grimoire. This was like something that was supposed to be used to harness demons against their will. And I did not realize the gravity of that as a small child. And I just talked her into, because it was Halloween and the veil is thin, I, you know, talked her into doing one of these rituals. So she ended up falling asleep. she ended up falling asleep well before the date, the stated time of that the ritual was supposed to be performed, which was like, it was like 12 o'clock or 2 a.m. and something like that. It was late. And I decided to just go ahead and do it myself because I've been trying to work up the courage the entire time I've been reading this book to do one of these rituals. I've been trying to just work myself up to it. And I figured, you know, it's Halloween. There's no better time than this. So she was asleep. My mom, my uncle had left. My mom was asleep. My dad was asleep. My brother was, it was just me awake in the house. And I gathered up all of the implements and decided, you know, I'm going to do this. And so I went and I gathered some candles. I just used scented candles. Once again, as a child, I didn't realize the gravity of the tools and how you're supposed to prepare and everything. So I grabbed some of my mom's scented candles, and the ritual stated that you were supposed to draw a pentagram on the floor with like chalk or paint. And we were in a rental property with a carpet. I did not want to upset my parents. So I decided that I was going to not skip that step, but utilize the architecture of the house that we were living in. Because as you would come off of the living room, as you would come out, you would enter a small kind of entrance hall. It would just had doors. So to the right, when you would enter through the living room, there was the bathroom door, and the wall would kind of slant, and then it would slant again. There was my bedroom door. There would be another slant for a closet, another slant for my mother's room. The wall would slant again. So basically, the room itself with the doors was in the shape of a pentagram.
Which
so
is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, it is really cool, except for the fact, you know, I didn't take into account that coming off of the living room, there was no wall there. It was just kind of an arch, so it was open. Once again, I did not even think about that. But I was like, okay, so this is going to serve as my pentagram. I set my candles up the way you're supposed to set them up and started walking like counterclockwise, I believe it was. And I was saying this chant, and it was all pretty crazy for a 12-year-old who didn't know what they were doing and, you know, wasn't smart enough to have respect for the religion at the time. And I was, you know, chanting and pacing and saying these words that I was supposed to say to summon this demon at the appointed time. And, you know, after all of the buildup and after all of the work and being so excited, I was very disappointed when absolutely nothing happened. And I was thinking, oh, great. You know, I put all this effort into it for absolutely nothing. Super bummed out. So I decided to just go to bed. And I went to bed and, you know, Becca left the next morning and it was no big deal. And maybe 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks passed. A little bit of time had passed. And at this time, my dad was working third shift at a job. So he didn't, I'm sorry, not my dad. My mom was working third shift at a job. She was working nights. And she didn't get home until, now this is during the school year. She didn't get home until about 6:30, 7:30 in the morning. And at the same time, my father, who worked construction, he worked really early. He would get up and he would leave the house by 5:30 a.m. So there was a span of about an hour and a half, 2 hours that I was left to listen for my little brother and to, you know, I have always been a very responsible kid. So it wasn't really an issue for me to get myself up and get my, you know, get ready for school. And then I would get my little brother breakfast and get him ready to go to daycare. And when my mother would get home from her job, she would, you know, pick us up, drop my brother off at daycare, drop me off at school. And then she'd come home for bed because she'd worked all night. She was very tired.
Right.
So one day I get up just a few weeks later and I'm in the bathroom. All the lights in the house are off. It's just me and my little brother there. And I'm in the bathroom. I'll never forget curling my bangs because that was the style then. And all of a sudden from outside the bathroom door, you know, the only light in the whole house, mind you, is the bathroom. So I open up the door and outside the bathroom door, I hear crying, like hysterical crying. And when I open up the door, there stands, you know, my little brother, not even 1 year old yet, standing in the hallway, and he's crying his eyes out, like rubbing his eyes, crying. And I bend down to one knee. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what's wrong? Because he's just hysterical. I take him into my arms and I say, honey, what's wrong? You know, why are you crying? What's wrong? And then as my arms wrapped around him, I remembered, wait a minute, he can't walk. He can't fully walk on his own yet. He had just started toddling and cruising by this point, but he definitely can't walk on his own. And, you know, we had a baby gate for his own safety up on his bedroom door so that if he were to wake up before us, he couldn't get out and hurt himself. Mm-hmm. And so I'm realizing this is occurring to me as I have him in my arms, and immediately I'm getting chills right now talking about it. Immediately my blood turned to ice and I'm like, okay, wait a minute. This can't be my brother. And I back up because the crying stopped as soon as I wrapped my arms around him. And when I pulled back from him, this thing that was not my brother, this thing was not my brother, okay? It laughed the most spine-tingling, bone-chilling laugh you could ever imagine, the most evil laugh, smiled at me, and then it was gone. If you have ever watched the movie The Queen of the Damned, how the vampires, how they just like move so fast that it's a blur, that is mm-hmm. exactly what it looked like. That is exactly what it looked like. And it was just gone. Wow. So that, I will never forget it. I was so scared. I mean, my heart was beating in my throat. I locked myself in the bathroom, which was directly behind me, and I had to compose myself. I mean, I was so frightened, and I feel really guilty still to this day to think about the fact that it took me a good 45 minutes to even go check on my baby brother, which, you know, I feel bad about that, but I was young, and I was so scared. And by the time I went and, you know, I went and I checked on my brother, the baby gate was undisturbed. He was still sleeping soundly in his bed. It clearly was not him.
Right.
And I was trying to, you know, rationalize this and justify this to myself, like maybe he got out, but there's no way he could have, there's no way. I mean, there's just no way that he could have at like 8, 9 months old moved that fast.
Right.
And, you know, it's funny to think back on it. I think I tried to, you know, mention it to my mom and tell it to my mom. And she kind of just, like, brushed it off at the time. Like, okay, you know, maybe she thought that I dreamed it or was making it up or something. Of course, she believes me now that I'm an adult. Hmm. But, yeah, that's probably the most scary thing that has ever happened to me.
Well, good. That there shouldn't be things beyond that.
I mean, there have been some that are close now, and I'm gonna put those in the book. There are some pretty creepy things that have happened.
Sure, sure. That almost sounds like it comes out of a horror movie.
I mean, that's what it felt like, to be honest. I was thinking to myself, you know, trying to calm myself down in the bathroom, like, this cannot be, you know, this cannot be real. I feel like I'm in the middle of a horror movie. Now, that's not really the end of it, though, because I never saw anything after that. We only lived there after that maybe a year, year and a half, and then we moved again. But after that, even though I hadn't seen anything with my eyes, during the summer, when school was out and I didn't have to get up and get ready for school and get my brother ready, I still had to get up and go and lay on the couch in the living room to listen for my brother. Now, when my dad would leave for work 5:30 in the morning, there was still that gap of about an hour or two. And they wanted to just be sure that if he woke up, I could hear him, you know, and tend to him as he needed. So I would lay on the couch. And, oh, I cannot tell you, I never could get back to sleep, because after this happened, there would be our basement door actually was in the house to connect, like the connecting door was in the house because it was an older house. And I think that they had probably like remodeled and added onto it at some point. Mm-hmm. But the door to get down to the basement was actually like in between our front door and our kitchen. So it was inside, and I would be laying on the couch, and almost every night after that happened, every day after that happened, I'd be trying to sleep. And I would hear somebody trying as hard as they could to get in the house. Now, I would hear them come up the stairs. I would hear them turning, jiggling the doorknob, trying their hardest to get in, trying to come up out of the basement. And I know that there is no one there, because this happened every single day. I mean, logically, who's going to, you know, break into your basement and then try to get into your house every single day? I mean, it was pretty clear to me that whatever this was, it was probably related to the ritual that I had done. But yeah, every morning that door handle, it would jiggle, and I would hear people on the steps in the basement, and I was so scared. And there was even claw marks that appeared. It was like wood paneling. It was an older house, wood paneling on the wall. And there were some claw marks that appeared by our fireplace that nobody ever even tried to explain away. Like, they were just there.
Hmm. Well, So there's a few things there. I mean, first of all, you clearly have some sort of energy around you if this stuff has been following you your whole life. And yeah. Then add into it, this was someplace you just moved into, so you have sort of the liminal aspect as well, which ups that type of energy.
Yeah.
And then you're doing a ritual. So who knows what you manifested, what manifested through you or whatever. I mean, yeah. there's a lot of very powerful stuff going on all at once. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and well, additionally, another thing is, for some reason, most of the places that we've lived throughout my childhood have been by cemeteries, and this house was directly beside a church and a cemetery. I don't know if that had anything to do, you know, with it, or the fact that, you know, this is an area where a lot of Civil War battles were fought. I mean, I have no idea. I don't really try to rationalize it, mm-hmm. but... Mm-hmm. There could have been a lot of factors.
Those are just the things that stood out to me. But yeah, I mean, if you're in a Civil War area, I mean, that stuff for some reason tends to retain a lot of energy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have always been very empathic, and I do pick up on people's energies a lot. So I just try to not put a name on it.
All right. Do you have some more stories you want to talk about?
Oh, I do. Another one that is one of the better ones, I think. We were living in another home. We moved around a lot. I mean, a lot when I was a kid. We'd stay somewhere maybe a year, year and a half, and we'd get bored with it. And, you know, if you're renting up until you buy a house, why not move around, you know, when you get sick of a place? So
sure.
My mom and my dad decided they were going to buy a house. And they did, and it was in an area of, it's Chucky, Tennessee. It's actually called Raytown. And it's one of these really, really backcountry, like middle of nowhere, super, super rural areas. I mean, the potholes in the road, old roads. So it's in the middle of nowhere. And she bought this beautiful house. We absolutely love this place. And we had lived there for a while. And there are some things that happened in that house that I'm not going to tell you about right this second. But down the road from the house, there were actually two girls that we ended up making friends with. Well, not girls, women, I suppose. One of them was 28. The other was like 25, I think, at the time. And I was about 17 or 18. years old, and I like to walk up and down the roads. That's actually how we met, is my now husband, who I've been with since I was 17 years old. Wow. We've been together for 14 years. So anyway, we were out one day, we were walking, and walked through their yard, and we met these girls, and made friends with them after an initially bumpy start of them telling us to get off of their property, which was a whole other story. But, you know, we lived in the country, so anyway, we made friends with these girls, and it turns out that they actually were Wiccan practitioners. They were very, very devoted to being Wiccan and to practicing the craft, and, you know, they're very, very sweet, sweet girls and or women, and they were together as a couple. And I'm not going to give their names to respect their privacy.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. But we had made friends with them, and we went one day we would just get bored, and we would all go and drive around just the back roads. And we were driving with them one day. It was actually, I don't believe my husband was with us. It was just me and the two of them. We were driving down this one road that I had never been down, and it was, you know, middle of nowhere. And as we come down a hill, in front of us, on the right-hand side of the road, there was forest. On the left-hand side of the road, we're coming down this hill kind of behind this house. As we come down behind this house and we start to round the curve that brings them up on the left-hand side, the driver's side of her Jeep that she was driving, and we all see it. We slow down and we see behind this house, we see this woman standing in the back of the house, and she wasn't just standing there. It reminded me a lot of what was that movie with the girl in the well? I don't remember what the movie was called.
The Grudge.
Yeah, that's what it was. Okay. So anyway, on the left-hand side of the road, there was this girl, and she was dressed all in white, like an older style of dress, like a long white kind of shift dress type thing with an apron, standing in the back of the yard. She had long black hair, and she was just standing there. And as we slowly were creeping past the house, because it was just very strange, she was standing there not moving, and she was hovering off the ground, what looked like an inch and a half, just kind of hovering there. And as we were driving past, she kind of turned with us and rotated towards us. And, you know, you can see, you know, if somebody's feet are on the ground and they're turning towards you, you can tell they're putting one foot down and then the other foot down. It wasn't that. There was a very seamless, she rotated in the air and just kind of looked at us. And it scared us so badly. Now, this house, it looked completely normal, you know, old truck in the driveway. The only thing amiss was the fact that there was this creepy girl in this creepy style dress in the back of the yard staring at us and like rotating off the ground. So she hauls. She slams down on the grass and hauls it out on the gas and hauls it out of there. And as we start speeding down the road to get away, a black dog runs out in front of her Jeep and sits right dead center in the middle of the road. Now, it was so creepy, but that's not even the creepiest part, okay? It was all the roads, all these little back roads, they're all connected. So we gathered ourselves once the dog finally moved, which I think she ended up just going around him. We gathered ourselves and we're like, you know, did you see that? We're each comparing stories. Was she really floating? Did you see how she turned? What was she wearing? You know, we're all just kind of like making sure we saw the same thing, talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And we decide, we work up our courage and we're like, just forget it. We're going to go back. So we start to come back to this house. We come down the same hill. We just wanted to know if we would see it again.
Right.
And it's completely different. Everything was completely different. Okay, the house, it was clear that nobody lived in the house. The grass was grown up. Now, we were there minutes before, and this grass was cut. There was an old truck in the driveway. I kid you not, I swear on my life. We go back, the grass is tall, grown up. There's no truck in the driveway. Windows are broken. Same house.
Huh.
No girl in the backyard. It was like a time warp. I don't know. There's still no explanation for that one. I mean, the fact that it wasn't just me who saw it, the fact that they both saw it too. We all saw the same thing. I mean, that's one that I will never, ever forget.
Understandable.
Yeah. Huh. So that was a trip.
Yeah, it's almost like you were in a different reality slightly.
That is exactly when I tried to think back on it, and it was almost like there was a feeling in the air, not so much a thickness, but like it felt like an altered state. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
it was just so strange. And I don't know if there was like a gap in time or I don't know what it could have been. I try to be pretty open to things, but there's really no other way that I could explain how the house was fine. I mean, it was an old house, but the grass was cut. The windows were fine. I mean, there was an old truck in the driveway. I just don't understand how the yard could just be all grown up and the windows broken. There's no explanation for it, really.
Wow. Okay.
It's a very creepy area. It's a very creepy area that I live in.
Huh. And did that also have like a Civil War battle?
I know that there have been like small skirmishes and things scattered about. That's probably about a half hour from the Battle of Blue Springs, which was in Greenville. And I know that, random little skirmishes are scattered about here and there. I can't actually speak for that area because I had never been down that road before. That was one of those country roads that I don't know if you have a lot of experience with driving down country roads, but this is one of those where it's not, unless you're looking to go there, you don't know to go there. And one of the girls had told me, that some creepy things had happened in the area. Just a little ways down from that, there is another road that's actually leads into a little hollow. And on both sides, there are like very steep hills with a forest. So basically the road is in the middle and the hills are very steep on both of the sides. You're surrounded by trees. And she said, she wanted to take me there. They would just take me and show me things that they thought were cool or things that they thought would creep me out. And that I don't think they ever expected that that would happen to us. But right down the road from that is where this hollow was. And we had actually went back with my husband. The legend goes that in this hollow, when you're there, you would see, if you stop your car and you park, you would see a man, how if somebody's smoking a cigarette in the middle of the night, you can see the cherry, like the ember on the cigarette glowing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the legend was supposed to be that you would see that walking down the road, like towards your car. Which isn't even that big of a scary thing, but we were just curious, to see if we would actually see it. And I decided that, we were going to go back. So we went with my husband one night and stopped the car, and we were waiting. We were waiting to see, if the ember would come, if the cherry would come on the cigarette, and we'd all see it, blah, blah, blah. So long story short, we've got the car stopped. We're waiting. We're just hanging out. We got the radio on. We're just, whatever, just waiting, looking out the windows. And that did not happen. But what did happen was, I have never had car trouble out of that car, not ever. And all of a sudden, the car turns off, dies, but then the entire car started shaking. And I'm talking, it was like an earthquake. This car was shaking so, so hard. And all of a sudden, the car is off now. The air conditioner starts pumping out ice cold air, flooding the car with this cold air. Now we're in the dark, in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by trees in this little hollow. Okay. And all this crazy noise is happening. There's vibrations and shaking and cold air. And I'm trying, and they're like, go, 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 start the car. We got to get out of here. And I think that they thought that I was messing with them or, I was just not turning the car on. I had never had any trouble with the engine. The car would not start. We tried for what felt like forever. It must have only been maybe 5 to 8 minutes that the car was actually dead. But I eventually did get the car to start. And, of course, we got out of there as quickly as we could.
Right.
But, so it was, there have been a lot of crazy incidents.
What that makes me think of, if someone's seeing something that looks like a cigarette, it makes me wonder if it's just a anomalous light.
Yeah.
And they're just applying some anthropomorphic sort of something to it. It must be the end of a cigarette when it's really a light, which may imply there's some kind of electrical activity in the area or something. And maybe with you, especially being sensitive to this stuff, it kind of like kicked up when you were in the car there.
Yeah. Well, and the fact too, that both of them were very sensitive as well. I don't show my husband. He's not really the sensitive type. He's not, the type to see crazy things, but that definitely, he tried to explain it away later. He tries to rationalize things, but right, there's really no explanation for that one.
So have you had any experiences that weren't necessarily scary, like that were more positive and weird?
Not particularly. They've all been pretty horrifying other than Oh, no, that's not true. That's not true. Actually, now that I come to think of it, I had this cat. Her name was Lily. She was this beautiful black cat, and she was part Siamese. Beautiful black cat, bright green eyes. She was my best friend. I loved her so much. And I actually got her when we lived in that first house that I told you about. I got her for my 12th birthday. And I had this cat for a long time. She actually just ended up dying like 2 years ago. So we've had her a good long time. And I loved her so much. I mean, this cat was like my soulmate. I can't even tell you. When I was a small child, I would climb trees to read books, and I would sit up in the tree and read my books, and my cat would come up there with me. Best cat I could ever ask for. And I mean, we were so, so close. And we ended up having to get her put down. We didn't know what had happened to her, but she was an indoor-outdoor cat. So if she wanted out, I would let her out. And I don't know if she maybe got clipped by a car. She would always come back in. But she was getting old anyway, and her joints were going bad, and she showed up one day, and I called for her the night before, and she never came. I called to take her to bed with me, and she never showed up. So I went out on my porch and looked under. We had like a deck, and she was under there, and I could tell that something had happened. Like I said, she may have gotten clipped by a car, or I don't know if she got attacked. I never could figure out what exactly happened to her, but I spent like 2 weeks trying to nurse her back to health. And, you know, get her to eat. And I was thinking, you know, maybe it's something small. Maybe it'll pass. Maybe I'm exaggerating. I was trying to just, you know, my cat's okay. I was in denial about it. And she wouldn't eat. She couldn't go to the litter box. I was feeding her chicken broth with like a syringe, like chicken noodle soup broth. And I would like make the chicken soup just to have fresh broth to give her but I finally came to the conclusion, you know, that we were going to have to get her put down, because initially the vet was just like, you know, see how she does, you know, but she wasn't getting better, and she was in pain. So we made the hard decision to put her down, and I didn't want to leave her side when they were putting her down. They wanted to just, you know, do it and have me like in the next room when they were giving her injection and shaving her little fur to get to her vein and all of that. And I was like, no, I've had this cat since I was a small child. She's one of my best friends. I'm not leaving her alone. So I stayed with her the whole time and was petting her and trying to just comfort her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the moment she died, I was crying hysterically. I mean, you would think that I had lost my firstborn child. I was crying so hard. And sobbing and shaking, and you know, I was petting her, and the moment that she died, I very, very definitely felt her soul leave her body, like through my hand. I could feel her presence leave, and I was inconsolable, completely inconsolable for like a week after that. I just could not stop crying, and occasionally if I think about it too hard, I still cry. But what happened a week later really helped me through. I was sleeping. And I very clearly felt I kind of sensed her presence. There were no other cats inside. I mean, it had to have been her. So it was kind of like I sensed her presence and kind of dreamt at the same time. It's like one of those things where you don't know if you're sleeping or awake, not quite a lucid dream, but like I could sense her and feel her. And I felt very strongly her presence curl up next to me, like curl up under my arm, and she was purring. My whole body could feel her purring, and she just kind of let me know it wasn't words, you know, it was kind of like a telepathic, like speaking to me type thing of letting me know that, hey, I'm all right, you know, I'm okay, I'm happy, type thing, because I was seeing her in my dream, but at the same time my whole body could feel her, like my whole body could feel her purring, and she was mm-hmm. just kind of imparting to me that, hey, I'm all right, you don't have to cry, I'm okay. And that is probably the only good experience I have ever had like had paranormally.
Wow.
But, yeah,
well, at least you had one.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, it was a big one, and it meant a lot to me to know that, you know, she was okay. And it was one of those things where when I got up the next morning, I cried when I thought about it, but I had no doubt in my mind. It left me with no doubt that she was okay.
So why do you think so many of your experiences have been negative?
I have no idea. I don't know if it's because of, you know, messing with things that I didn't understand at a young age. I told you I had experimented with a lot of different various religions and what have you. Mm-hmm. Now, from the age of, well, really from the time I was born up until the time I was 8 years old, my grandma would always take me to church. You know, I was Baptist, and we would go to church every Sunday, and I would go to church every Wednesday. And up until the time when I was about 12, I decided, you know, that being a Baptist wasn't for me. Christianity wasn't for me. I have the utmost respect for Christians. I think it's a beautiful religion. It just wasn't. I didn't feel like it was what aligned with my soul. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, just certain things, like, I believe that God, whatever God is God, whatever created the universe is something very loving. And I just don't believe in the condemnation of, you know, if you do this or if you do that, you're going to forever burn in hell. I just don't believe that, because I believe that the Creator is all loving. So whatever the Creator is, I don't even try to put a name on that. But I had tried a few different religions, and there was a time when I was about 13, 14 years old that I tried what is called spiritual Satanism. And this is not, now mind you, this is not typical Satanism, not what you're thinking, like, you know, they sacrifice babies and, you know, no, evil.
That's not what I think of Satanism. I think of LaVey's stuff and the Temple of Satan and stuff.
Right. And see, what I was, the religion that I was practicing, or the sect of it, which was spiritual Satanism, it was basically the way that they believed that, you know, Lucifer was not, you know, was not evil, but it was a very twisted around, you know, I have respect for them too. I think everybody, whatever works for you spiritually, that is great. That's probably the right path for you if you're happy with it and your soul's at peace. Right. But for me, you know, looking back, it's pretty dark, and I didn't realize how dark it was. Now, they don't preach evil. They preach, you know, meditation and opening chakras and, you know, which is fine, but the way that they go about it is, I'm not going to get into, like, a super lot of detail, but it's, if I had to look back on it now, I would consider it not necessarily evil, but a little manipulative, a little dark. Definitely not what I align with now. but during that time in my life, I was doing rituals, and I was, you know, trying to contact demons and guardian demons and doing different things to try to please Father Satan, and you renounce all religion, and, you know, Satan is your God. And basically the dark aspect of it wasn't that, you know, like I said, they didn't say, you know, do this, do that. They didn't condone evil, but they were very hateful against, like, Jewish people and Christians. And they basically, you know, would look upon Christians as being disgusting and, like, disrespect. And I just don't condone any kind of hate. You know, I'm all about love as an adult, but at the time, I would say, if anything, the reason my experiences have been so bad is because I opened myself up to such darkness without properly understanding fully what I was getting myself into. I opened myself on several different occasions with several different religions to darker forces, and not realizing that I was doing that, not really protecting myself, I welcomed those things into my life. And I just think the message with that is, you need to really understand what you're doing and educate yourself on something before you go jumping headfirst into it, because there's a lot of power where you put your intention. And, you know, if you do a ritual and you're basically saying, you know, cutting your finger and saying, you know, I give my soul over to Father Satan, and, you know, that's probably not the wisest thing to do if you're not looking for some crazy things to happen in your life. You know, and I have respect, like I said, I have the respect, but the hate, I don't think, is ever the answer. And that is why I don't, you know, I try to just remain religionless and just, like, try to live in the now and be a peaceful, loving person and have patience and love for every person, respect for every religion. But I do not currently align with a religion.
Right. And I agree with that. Hate generally is not a solution to anything. But I mean, there's so many versions of Satanism at this point that vary from the, like, because like the way I look at it is if you're worshiping Satan as a deity, you have to be Christian to do that. Because yeah. only Christians believe in Satan as a deity. So you're kind of like Christian, but you're on the flip side of the same coin.
Yeah, and we'll see what
And with LaVey's, it was more sociological, and then you have like the I think it's the Temple of Satan that's going now that's fighting for people's free speech and things like that, and are actually respectful of other religions.
Yeah, and that's all great. And I have no problem with any of that. Like I said, the thing that really got me was it's hard to say this. I'm not trying to offend anyone, but thinking about the way that they would say it is, you know, it basically all happened. It's the flip side, you know, basically God is evil, Satan is good, you know, and it was just, I don't even remember all of the tenets basically, but most of it did focus on growth, but it was just because the hatred aspect was so, so strong. You know, that you need to condemn anyone in your life who is a Christian and belittle them and that they are actually evil and that they stole your power and that Christians have stole your power so that you can never ascend and you can't open your chakras and that you used to have the power of gods, which may be true. Maybe at one point in our lives, you know, we are God. Maybe we did have the power of gods at one point in our evolution. But I definitely don't think that Christians took that, you know, took that away. And
it's looking for a scapegoat.
Yeah, and there are a lot of subsects of a lot of. I think honestly, I align the most with the Unitarian Universalists, you know, which are you know, pretty much open to welcoming to any religion. There's a Unitarian Universalist church, Holston Valley, near us, and everyone is welcome there. You know, whether you're Wiccan or you're even atheist or you're, you know, Christian or whatever, it's basically just, you know, you're worshiping a higher power, but that higher power is whatever you deem it to be, and it's completely about like love and acceptance. So yeah, that's probably what I align with the closest, but I think I welcomed those dark forces into my life out of naivete. Basically, I just didn't realize what I was getting into or the fact that it was genuine, it was real.
Yeah. So did you have any other stories you wanted to share?
During that same time, I'll give you one last one.
Okay.
I don't want to give you all the book material, but the last one was a little after we had met the witches down the road, as I like to call them. I had graduated high school and decided, my mom and my stepdad at this time decided that they were going to get divorced. And I love him. I mean, he'd been my father figure since I was 8 years old. So that was dad. I mean, he still is dad, even though they've been divorced for a good while now. He's still my dad. So I decided, you know, I'm going to take a break from living with mom. I'm going to go live with him for a little while. And we had lived on this little winding backcountry road called Black Road. We lived in this little old farmhouse. And it was, I don't know what year it was built, but the construction was that you did not have that of... You didn't have electricity upstairs as far as outlets. They had a light up there. Like, it had a light bulb. But it did not have, like, outlets that you could plug things into. It was an old farmhouse. And you go in, and there'd basically be... There were, like, three rooms on the bottom. The living room, the kitchen, and the bathroom. And then there was this very old, narrow, and steep set of stairs that was behind a closet going upstairs. And my brother initially was... My little brother at this time, he was probably 8. And he was staying up there. He had a bed up there for when he would come to visit, you know, on weekends or whatever. And he told me, you know, one day, he said, I really don't like sleeping up there. And I'm like, why? I would love to sleep up there because there was a lot more room than the room that I had downstairs. And he was just like, I don't know. I just can't sleep well up there. It's just creepy up there. And I was like, okay, well, I will gladly trade with you. So, you know, of course, I'll have the bigger room and the privacy. I'm older than him. So, yeah, I would love to have my own little staircase and a big room upstairs. So we switched. And I, you know, had my own staircase, had the big room, was all excited. And I was a crazy partying teenager at this time and 18 years old and drinking underage and having a very wild phase in my life. And I would, when my alcohol bottles, I'm not condoning underage drinking, just by the way, I had, when we would empty a bottle of Grey Goose or whatever it happened to be, we would put those bottles to line the top of the staircase. So there was like a little ledge where the guardrail or the handrail to the staircase was, so you wouldn't fall down. There was this little ledge that would come out of it, and I would put the bottles, collect the bottles, and put the empty bottles there. And one night, it started because I had initially practiced that satanic ritual where I dedicated my soul to Satan in that house. And I suppose that is probably what started it all. And don't sell your soul to Satan, kids. it was not a smart thing to do, because shortly after that, everything turned upside down and it became like a nightmare. I was upstairs, my dad was at work, it was just me alone in the house, and the first night it sounded like something was on the roof, like something big. It sounded like an elephant was trampling around on the roof. And it scared me so bad. I thought that I didn't know if somebody was trying to break in the house. I didn't know what was going on. I was alone in the house. I was so scared. I think my dad was out of town working at Shutdown or something at the time, because with his construction company, they would go, you know, all over. They would go to Texas sometimes to build things, or, you know, whatever state, for a few weeks at a time. And I called him and I'm like freaking out. Like, there's something on the roof. There's definitely something on the roof. I don't know what's going on. If you could just imagine, like, loud footsteps thundering, like an elephant. And he ended up calling one of his friends who lived down the road to come and make sure that I was okay, make sure there was nothing on the roof. So the guy comes, shines a flashlight up there, crawls up there on a ladder. There's nothing on the roof. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now my dad thinks I'm crazy. So anyways, a few weeks after that, I've got my cousin Melissa staying the night. And we decide we're going to do a seance to try to contact whatever it was that was on the roof. So we rig up our little Ouija board and we shut off all the lights and light a candle and tried to contact whatever it was. Didn't have any, to no avail. Couldn't make contact with whatever it was. We started to go to sleep. Now, I had that cat, Lily, my black cat that died. I had her at the time living with me at that house. She was inside and she had curled up with us and went to sleep. And in the middle of the night, maybe 2-3 in the morning, we hear every bottle fall off and break. Fall, all the bottles lying in the stairs. We heard them, each one, fall down, hit the stairs, shatter. And I was so mad. I was like, oh, that cat, you know. I was so angry. I was thinking she's rubbing on the bottles and knocking them over, doing what cats do, knocking things over. And so, you know, we turn on the light. We get up, get out of bed, fly over to the staircase. The bottles were fine. Not one bottle was broken. The bottles were completely fine. And it was like a mind game, because each week it would be something different. The whole time I lived there, I would start to notice, like, crayons on the wall, like blue crayon marks, red crayon marks, just the color like a kid would scribble on the wall, you know, and these marks would appear. So every week, with every mark that I noticed, another mark would appear. So it's before I knew it, by the time I moved out of that house, the entire room was covered in crayon marks, red ones, blue ones, green ones, all over, like a child had been marking up the walls. And now my brother was 8 at the time, but he didn't play with crayons, and he hadn't even come to stay the night in weeks. So there was no explanation as to where these crayon marks had come from. And then one day, I had just started college at the time, and I had been staying with my boyfriend, who is now my husband, been staying with him for a few days. I came home, go upstairs, you know, after being gone a few days, unloaded all of my stuff, and I look over at the wall, and there is, I've always loved knives, so I have a knife collection. One of my knives, in the wall, stuck in the wall. This knife was just there, just in the wall. Like somebody had taken the knife and slammed it there. And it's just hanging there, just chilling out in the wall. And of course, you know, I'm like, why is there a knife in my wall? What is going on? My brother hadn't been there. I go downstairs. I talk to my dad. I'm like, did you do this? Why is there a knife on my wall? He looks at me like I'm insane. He's like, of course I didn't stick a knife in your wall. Why would I do that? So, yeah. I ended up moving out, moving out shortly thereafter and moving in with my now husband. And I don't know if anybody else ended up having experiences in that house, but I do know that it has been torn down since. So it no longer exists. Yeah, so that is another very scary one.
And what's the name of your book going to be?
The book is called Companion of the Dead.
Okay, and it's the pre-order starts...
July 31st on Amazon KDP. You can access the release information on my KDP Author Central page, which is amazon.com/author/angelhammer, H-A-M-M-E-R.
Yes, exactly how it sounds.
Yes.
The name of a death metal band.
I know, it's great.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us, and maybe we'll have you back on after your book comes out.
I hope so. It's been great talking to you.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
And once again, I want to thank all of our patrons, but particularly those at the $10 or more level: Allison Cook, Lindsay Marie Trebet, Nick Martin, UFO Weekly News, Super Inframan, Tim, Edu Kamahort, Janet Bunderson, 36 Dingo, Maria, Nate Syria, Jennifer Campbell, Mike McGuire, Paul Buscini, Kevin, John Rutledge Foster, Eric Citron, Andy McNamara, Sasha Lorg, Matthias Sunby, Christopher Vaughn, Riker and Stark, Sean Cosgrove, Jose A., Roger Gonzalez, Craig Cicernos, Lindsay Jackson K., Alfred Tuttle, Kevin Schreck, Patricia Gaia Quinta, William Lovelace, Mark Brady, Chris Iazahata Doggin Sandwich, John Eddy, and Carla Mahoney. Thank you all so very much. You help make this show possible. All right, and Angel Hammer's book, Companion of the Dead, is available now on Amazon. Look up Companion of the Dead or by the author Angel Hammer. It's available on Kindle at the moment, and we recorded this a few weeks ago. I didn't have a chance to get it up prior to the actual publication of it. So you can get it right now if you're interested. All right, and to take you out, we're going to hear some Ritualizer coming off their Blood Oaths EP. This is a band from Brooklyn, New York, pretty much a straight-out metal band. And this is a song called Night Terrors. We'll see you next time.
have been listening to Where Did the Road Go? This show is made possible in part from our Patreons, and we thank you and everyone listening for helping us continue this exploration of the strange. You can always find everything Where Did the Road Go related at www.wheredidtheroadgo.com. And thank you so much for your support.